Hey, man. Did you touch my drum set?
Nope.
It's just weird, because seems like someone definitely touched my drum set.
Yeah, that is weird. Because I didn't touch them.
Hello and welcome, everyone.
Oh, hey.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 91, or whoa, ho, ho, 92.
I'm not joking around here.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn out series.
It's not an accident at all.
I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
Mr. Son of a
Beach.
And
this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Thank you for joining us this week. We have a great show planned for you today. This one's going up a little bit early for reasons I will explain shortly. A lot of stuff going on this week. Holy crap, I am exhausted. I am totally exhausted from all the stuff that was going on with Comic-Con to, you know, all this crap that going on at with the show. Let's just say that. Should we? Got a lot of had a lot of cancellations this week, and a lot of people, just straight up canceling on us. And I gotta say, it's the most frustrating thing in the world. And you know, I don't say this often. I really try not to. I know I did kind of in the all like throw it out there sometimes, but you know, we've got a fair number of listeners to this show. And we're gaining traction in, you know, iTunes rankings and everything like that. We make it in there. But every time you, you know, email like a publicist or somebody like that or somebody's management and the word podcast comes up, a couple red flags go straight up into the air. And so it's really frustrating. You know, this is not a blanket statement for all publicists that I've worked with in the past, because normally the ones that we do work with and get the musicians and comedians that we have on this show are absolutely fantastic. And that's why we have them on this show, because they think it's a cool idea or, you know, whatever. I'm not going to put words in their mouths, of course. But yeah, it is a super frustrating thing doing this show and trying to get people on. And this week has just been so effing hectic. And it just drives me crazy because, you know, I believe in this product. I know that you guys who are listening to this, the regular listeners, all, you know, 4,500 of you that regularly listen to this show, believe in this product. So thank you very much, and thank you for sticking with us. But, you know, it's tough, man. I put a lot of time and effort into this, and if people would just take the time to check it out and see that it's fucking legit, sorry about that, swearing right at the beginning of the show, then they maybe would send their clients our way. So anyway, God damn it. So frustrating, you guys. I mean, I don't make it, you know, I put in a lot of time into this show, and I don't make a red cent on it yet. Actually, I'm still owed money from our last network. And I will not name names. Anyway, we've got a great show coming up for you guys today. Grant Olson from the phenomenal new band Gold Leaves is going to be joining us soon. You may remember him. He was one half of Arthur and You. Did some great stuff in that band, and now doing great stuff on his own. Or should I, that's a weird turn of phrase for that, on his own, because he had a lot of help with this record. A lot of people came and did stuff on this record for him. So I don't know if he would consider it on his own. I don't know. Whatever. He wrote all the songs. God, seriously, do I need to? Okay. I need to take a little bit of a chill pill, don't I? Anyway, yeah. So he's going to be Grant Olson. He's going to be joining us shortly. Take a breath. This is exactly what Eddie Pepitone I had him sign some, sign his poster for me from the last laugh hole that I went to. And he wrote on my poster, he said, "Remember to breathe, your friend Eddie." And he's totally right. I get really worked up sometimes. I know I don't really show it too much on this show. Sometimes my voice has a tendency to make it sound like I'm joking. But I do, you know, I get worked up. I'm a very anxious person. And right now, I'm a little anxious because Grant Olson is coming over here, and I'm very excited. Very excited indeed. Couple plugs just to get out of the way. We've got a new iTunes review for you guys from listener Sarah KJ. And it says, let me just go around here and pull this up. It says, "Love it, 5-star review, bombing like you should." Wait a minute. What does that mean? Sarah KJ, what does that review mean? Like we always bomb? God, I hope not. Jesus. Well, thanks for the 5 stars anyway, Sarah. Really appreciate that. Also, please, please, if you do enjoy this show, if you're a new listener, go to the iTunes page, even if you don't use iTunes. Go and give us a star rating on there. Really helps us out in keeping us on those top 200 charts. You can leave a little short review like Sarah did. So we always really appreciate that, and we'll always read those. Just to give you guys a little something back. Let's see. Also one last plug here. Every Thursday you can now hear me, if you're here in Seattle, you can hear me on the real radio, the terrestrial radio waves at AM 570, the all new KVI. Yeah, it's fun. I get on there and I talk about upcoming shows here in Seattle. It's on this show called The Buzz, and it's pretty fun. I enjoy doing it every Thursday. So I'm on there at around like 1:30, 1:35 or so. You can also find that. You can stream it live on the web at KVI.com. So go and check that out. So let's get into this a little bit. I had kind of a weird thing today happen. I was perusing the Facebook page and saw that a bunch of people had been posting about it being the 18th anniversary of Kurt Cobain's suicide. Now that it kind of left me with a bad taste in my mouth a little bit, because you know, being from Seattle and being bombarded with all things Kurt Cobain all the time for so many years. It gets a little, for lack of a better term, played out, right? I mean, the guy was a genius. Let's just put that out there. I was a total fan of Nirvana. I was a huge fan of that band, a huge fan of the 90s era music that was coming out of this city and coming out of many cities during that time. However, it got really kind of played out, don't you think? Like it spawned this whole new type of rock that you know, people called grunge or alternative. A lot of it was very bad, and I think just because it came from that era, people thought it was good, you know. And I'm not speaking about Nirvana now. I'm speaking about a lot of other bands that came out at that time. And you know, being from Seattle, you have this thing hanging over your head where you're always, you know, I don't know. You're always kind of, I don't know, a music snob, right? Is that's a stereotypical view of what Seattleites probably are around the country, I would imagine, especially during the 90s. And you know, I kind of fall into that category. So, you know, talking about Nirvana and wearing Kurt Cobain t-shirts nowadays feels a little bit contrived. But when I heard that news that it was the 18th anniversary of his suicide, it brought back a lot of memories. I gotta say, I remember where I was at when I heard the news. I was over in Ocean Shores, staying in a house with my family because we did this yearly trip every Easter. As a big family unit, we'd rent a house out at the ocean, and we'd go razor clamming early, early in the morning, and we'd just have a good time for the weekend, for the extended weekend. And I remember getting that news and just being so devastated. So devastated. We were watching the news, the local news channel, and it was they were broadcasting it, and there was this big candlelight vigil in downtown Seattle, and I remember seeing that and almost coming to tears, but trying not to, because my cousin was just totally making fun of me for it, which made it worse. You know, and God, I must have been, what year was that? 18 years ago. Do the math, Aaron. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a while ago, and I was young. I was a young teen, and it definitely bothered me, like it bothered a lot of people. It was like one of your heroes dying. It was one of my heroes dying. What am I saying? And just hearing that and remembering where I was and how it felt was a very, I don't know, it was kind of nostalgic mixed with not so awesome things, right? Because you always remember back to when you're a teen, and it's just a very awkward age for everybody. And losing a hero does not make that any better, right? Especially living in kind of a depressed area, you know, growing up in those kind of surroundings. I don't know. I'm just rambling. But and it was weird because we are once again this weekend going back to the ocean for the first time in I believe 17 years. My family is getting back together, renting a house over in Ocean Shores, and we're going to go over there and go clamming and everything like that. So that's the reason that this show is going up early. But yeah, that was just so weird. It was like, oh my God, we're doing this again. So let's hope this weekend none of my musical heroes dies. That'd be a good thing. Boy, that was dark. That was dark. How about we pick this up, shall we? Let's pick this up. Let's pick up the mood. We're going to hear a song by Cold Leaves, Mr. Grant Olson, who will be joining us shortly. This is off the latest album, The Ornament, this song, title track, The Ornament. All right, The Ornament, Cold Leaves. We'll be back in just a moment. It covered all bright lights in Easter Island. Our own room right, we are back. That was The Ornament by Gold Leaves, and sitting here with me in Dining Room Studios, joining me here in the beautiful Greenwood neighborhood on episode 92 is Grant Olson. Welcome, sir.
Hello.
I like your coat. I have kind of a very similar one. It seems like the wool coat is in Seattle right now.
Yeah, I think it says old tradition, the black pea coat.
Yeah, totally.
Harkening back to Navy times.
Yeah, everybody in Seattle, rather than being a lumberjack, everybody's switched to being a sailor.
Yeah, it's a maritime sort of town, though.
It is. Yeah, it makes sense, right?
Exactly.
It makes sense. Well, we were actually, speaking of Seattle, we were just reminiscing about Seattle's own 9/11. 18 years ago today, Kurt Cobain committed suicide, and we were just kind of talking about where we were when we heard. And it's a weird thing to kind of talk about a suicide that way, or somebody, a person's death.
Yeah, I mean, as far as 9/11, as far as knowing where you
were. Yeah, or just remembering something. Do you have enough? Do you have enough slack on your?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make you as comfortable as possible.
Oh, yeah, right? No, I'm feeling good.
Okay, good. After another glass of the bourbon, it'll be totally fine.
Yeah,
thanks. So you were saying you were at a dentist's office.
Yeah, I don't remember the dentist appointment so much, but definitely the drive back to school.
Right.
I was probably a sophomore
in
high school, yeah. In town on the east side. I moved around a lot when I was a kid, but I happened to be in...
Where on the east side were you?
I went to Sammamish High School at that time. I think I was maybe a freshman or sophomore.
Okay.
Whatever that was. But
yeah.
I remember it.
Did you know Sean Dettori?
It sounds familiar.
I think you went to Sammamish. I don't know. Never mind.
Yeah. I haven't really kept in touch with anyone. But kind of floated around so much that, I was stuck to my loner ways.
Right.
Yeah.
Not knowing many people. So like the Nirvana style of music probably touched your soul a little bit.
It was a perfect storm, I think. The age and the angst and all that stuff for sure.
Right.
I just
went,
we had some friends in town. We went to the EMP the other day to check out that, display. It was kind of weird.
Had you seen it before?
I don't want to piss people off.
No.
Put it together. No, I hadn't seen it. I'd seen most of the stuff in the exhibit.
Is there like new pieces or something like that?
There was a couple demos that I hadn't heard, that was pretty much.
Oh, cool.
The only.
Oh, maybe that. I was thinking because they did it. They did a thing. I think it was at the Sam, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Is it at the Sam, like a Kurt Cobain exhibit or something like that, or Nirvana exhibit that they did there?
Maybe it was
a bunch of pictures or something like that.
Yeah. No, this was more of a Hard Rock Cafe sort of aspect
Yeah. I've only been to EMP once, and I thought it was pretty cool, like seeing all the rock memorabilia, and like I'm super into like guitars and stuff, so seeing all that stuff is really cool.
Yeah. I know a lot of people dog on it because it's like, just Paul Allen's personal
collection. I will say that I was way more impressed with like the Star Wars stuff that he has and like the what's it called, the science fiction museum that's like downstairs or something.
Yeah, I miss most of that. They had a big Avatar thing. I haven't seen it. I don't want to spoil the movie for myself, so I skipped that.
It was pretty terrible, man.
Yeah, I've heard it. I heard it's bad. I watched a little bit one day when on TV, and I don't think it had the effect. I think the idea was to
see it on the big screen in
really
3D, and be very high.
Yeah,
I think I was very high when I saw it. Yeah,
so it probably worked out.
You know what? Kind of like the visual parts of that movie were pretty cool, but like the storyline and just there was a lot of cliches in that movie. It was like a 3 hour long cliche.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah,
that's a really
that coming.
Yeah, I should write that down. That's a great description of that movie.
3 hour long cliche.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So Grant, let's talk about you, sir.
sure.
Yeah. So when did you start playing the guitar? When did you start writing songs?
Well,
was it back in high school?
Two different things. Yeah, I started playing guitar. It was pretty late. It's probably honestly around that same time of that year in high school. You know, just acoustic.
Like when you got
stuff.
when you got your first.
Yeah,
your
it was an acoustic instrument. Guitar then. Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I'd written some stuff kind of in secret for years until I moved back here, I guess, I don't know how many years later, like, you know, 15 years later or something like that.
Was your dad in the military? Your parents in the military?
Postal service. So he had a, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So he just jumped around government jobs. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that really happened with the like postal workers, I guess.
Transferable job, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one everywhere, so yeah.
That's true.
We moved around a lot, so I did a lot of moving around in Colorado a lot before here,
mm-hmm.
and then came back. I started writing songs out there, and then
okay. And you were like high, like what, 15, 16 at that time or something?
Yeah, but then it was a kind of a long hiatus before I got really serious with it.
Right, right.
I was like 26 or 27.
Uh-huh.
Which would be bad math if you went back and checked. So about 10 years.
Don't worry about it, man. I totally tried to before you got here. I was trying to figure out, like, it's the 18th anniversary of Cobain's death today. How old was I when that happened? Now knowing that I am 32 years old, it took me a while to figure that out. It's 14. I got it now.
Right on.
Yeah.
Do you have to bust out your iPhone calculator?
I was thinking about even just cutting that whole part out in post and just going back and getting the calculator on the computer here. But
no, you got to leave it
in. Yeah, yeah. I go for realism on this show.
Right
yeah.
on. I appreciate that.
So you get your first acoustic guitar and you just start kind of plucking away. What was the impetus to get one? Were you a fan of music at a young age?
I played drums. I grew
oh, really?
Up playing drums. Yeah, that was the only instrument I took lessons on.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's still around. I hear people talking about Don Bennett across the way. I think he gave me lessons for a little while. Out in Bellevue, and then
I think he's still there.
Yeah, I think he has a studio or something like that.
Right,
but I remember that. And then, I had a set, played that for a long time, and then just guitar on the side, you know.
Yeah.
And sadly, I didn't take it very seriously. You know, I just taught it. I think I was in, I don't know why, in self-taught mode of that. I thought
that was
cooler for, very dumb reasons, I think.
So did you ever take lessons?
Not from anyone else. No.
Oh, really?
Just
like reading Valve, teaching like, yourself how
yeah,
to
yeah,
read tablature and stuff like that or something.
Yeah, virtual lessons on
okay.
YouTube
these right.
nowadays. But
yeah.
I there's still time. I want to, on my to-do list for sure in between these two albums. I really actually do want to take some lessons. I got Bill Patton in the band who's a big teacher in Seattle. So
oh, really?
Hopefully we could do a trade.
There you go. Yeah, I took lessons for on and off for about, I don't know, probably a couple years, you know. But I was so disinterested in it. Like it never grabbed me. Like learning scales and things like that. Like I was never interested in that. All I wanted to do was learn how to play like a Hendrix song or you know, a Green Day song or, you know, throw any song in there.
Uh-huh.
But then I would take that stuff home and I was so ADD with that kind of thing. Like I'd fiddle around with it and I'd get it down and then I would just never, you know, look at it again.
Uh-huh.
And so then I would come in the next week to the guitar lesson. And I mean, my guitar teacher probably just hated me.
Yeah, you've probably seen it before.
Yeah,
kids not doing their homework.
Yeah, a little preteen coming in and not doing what they're supposed to be, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, I think there is there's that idea, especially during that. I don't know, the self-taught thing is such a farce, or the fact that you don't need to work hard at, you know, music or any sort of art form.
Well, it's like
you just wake up and you're
right.
You're either you've got the power or you don't, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there is, I mean, there's something to be said about people who are self-taught, I think, you know, especially if we're speaking in terms of like being classically taught,
mm-hmm.
you know, like somebody who actually goes into like higher education and really learns how to play guitar or jazz or something like that. I think there's a big difference between being self-taught and then being able to play that type of music, because people I've talked to in the past have, you know, they've stated, yeah, I have trouble with writing my own material,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, I think they're, you know, and, you know, people who are self-taught are predominantly writing their own material, right?
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, to a certain extent. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I still won't, I guess I'm not self-taught even at this point from how I write, because I take uh-huh. a lot of, you know, points from, I read a lot, especially about writing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm reaching for some sort of knowledge, a base between that. And I know the rudimentary stuff of mm-hmm. guitar and, you know, some other aspects of music. So I guess I've learned stuff. I just never paid for it, you know?
Right, right. Well, there's something to be said too for like songs that are, I think, especially now with the style of music that is coming out predominantly from here in Seattle again, that style, that kind of that mixture of like Americana and country and with a lot of reverb and a lot of, you know, great harmonies and stuff like that. The musical parts aren't, or they don't sound like too complicated, right? It's like, it's all about keeping it simple.
for better or worse. I mean, I think there's, yeah, I mean, there's a couple sides. I think there's also getting, simplifying a more complex issue lyrically or even structurally, you know, to uh-huh. make it a really good pop jam is a complicated thing, in my opinion, you know.
Well, how did, okay, so let's, tell us about how kind of you morphed into what you're doing right now. Because when you started guitar, were you trying to play like complicated stuff, or were you playing complicated stuff?
When I was younger, that's kind of the phase when I started getting into folkier, easier, mm-hmm. you know, folkier stuff. You know,
okay.
I was always listening to way more complex and louder stuff.
Like what? What was your go-to?
I think that era, you know, I was really into the Discord stuff, you know, mm-hmm. the Fugazi, a lot of the touch and go stuff at that time, like Brainiac or I don't know. A lot of that stuff, it wasn't definitely not three chord stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But like Sonic Youth, where you're sticking a screwdriver in between your strings and your fretboard. And
I mean, all that stuff was rad, and I definitely experimented with a little bit of that when I got mm-hmm. my electric guitars. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I mean, speaking of Nirvana, I think that acoustic show that they did was probably the biggest influence on me ever.
The Unplugged, MTV Unplugged thing? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I actually just watched that recently, too.
Really?
Maybe about a year ago. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, in a good way?
Totally. Yeah. I think I've reconnected with that type of music, too. Because I got, you know, being from Seattle and living here, you got really burnt out on it, I think. Because and this is what I was saying at the beginning of the show too, is that style of music, whatever you want to call it, alternative or grunge or whatever,
mm-hmm.
kind of morphed into this shit. It took a real big sidestep into like, well, they're playing the same chords that Nirvana did and Soundgarden did, so it's got to be cool. You know, and it just took this big sidestep into Shitsville.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about that, that era took me into a different way, because they started talking about being so hip to the Beatles, and I never listened to that stuff. I didn't grow mm-hmm. up around mm-hmm. music, so, and like Neil Young and stuff. I think was more
totally.
Nirvana that got me into, and The Who and stuff. That's who got me into those bands instead
of
my folks. So, I mean, besides like the scratch acid stuff that they would also talk about, but you know, that Vaseline's or whatever. That show. I mean, and it was fairly easy to emulate on an acoustic guitar.
Right. You could finally see it.
Yeah, and you could kind of sound like it. So it's
right,
a lot
right.
of a shorter bridge to get to instead of trying to learn like Zeppelin solos and stuff like that for me. You know? Yeah, so that's kind of where I stayed. But and I mean, I think that just broke down the essence of what they were doing was just good pop folk songs, you know, drenched in whatever you want to call it, you know, whatever their chorus pedals and screaming
distortion and flangers and
at the root of them, they're all just
half broken things.
Yeah, but they're all just amazing pop songs.
Oh yeah. 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 Amazingly written. So were your, at this point in time, were your parents like 100% behind you too? Did they like encourage you to keep playing music? And
surprisingly, they were really, they got me, I played the drum set in my bedroom. I think they thought it was really, really cathartic.
Oh yeah.
You know, they thought I was a bit disturbed, I think. But, so that was, I think they got that for me specifically as an outlet. I definitely didn't grow up with records or anything like that. And they would, when I was really young.
Were your parents like big music fans?
No, they were, there's a couple country records. They're really religious. Mm-hmm. They used to, I guess, you know, they listen to some music casually, and they still had a couple residual records from that time before they were born again or whatever. But so I mean, I had the spiel a little bit growing up about the devil and music and whatnot. And I got some of those like Christian rock records when I was little.
DC Talk and
I think that was maybe that was after my time.
DC Talk was more like R&B or something like that.
It was a few years R&B. After I had completely rejected that stuff. I had a cassette tape that I've tried to look for. If anyone's listening to this and they can track this down, it's called The Raptures, and it was definitely like really square white like family rapping about Revelation and about the rapture. And it's amazing.
So it was like a double entendre.
Oh, yeah. It was all there.
They were actually rapping.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Rapping about the rapture.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to say, and then they grew up and became the rapture.
Yeah, they dropped the S. Yeah, maybe that has something to do with it. But I want to hear this tape again so bad because it's just hilarious. And
you can't find it. You can't find it anywhere on the internet or anything.
No, it's some deep cuts, man.
Okay, well, if you're out there and you know of a place to get the Rapture,
the Raptures.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Not Raptures. The Rapture. That's probably pretty easy to find.
I think.
Email me, Aaron at air-ray.net. Please, God, I want to hear this.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's got to be good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wow, you grew up pretty religious then, huh?
You said it was the backdrop of it, they were kind of
born again.
Well, that was the backdrop. When did that happen? Religious, and then before I was born. But,
okay.
Yeah, there was that air around me before I kind of went my own direction.
Yeah, but, yeah. Were they afraid for you?
I think they still are afraid.
Are they? So they're still pretty steeped in their beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, God, good for them now. I mean, it would break my heart, I think, at this point if they gave it up. I wouldn't try to convert anyone out of that. I mean, there's a lot of ways I would try to change maybe the going about it or the specific
it doesn't sound like you have any like hard feelings toward them over this.
Yeah, I mean, I've come full circle. I'm old enough now. I've kind of put that to bed. Taken me a while. But
so there was some ill will.
A little bit. There's earlier. A little like I don't know. You know, you have really, you're bringing up some really existential questions at like 3 years old, you know, about monsters and the devil and stuff.
Right, right. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine that. Like, my parents were totally, my dad was very, very anti-religion when I was growing up. And he would always turn on, like, Sunday after the cartoons were over and stuff, he'd always change the channel to Jimmy Swaggart and then point at this guy and tell me, that guy is full of shit. You never believe anybody on television.
Yeah.
And so he was very adamant about this. Like, he would get worked up to the point of like getting worked up about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was young. And so I kind of always grew up in that household where it was like staunchly atheist.
So was your rebellious teens? Did you go to like church camps? And stuff?
Went to youth group just to say "fuck you, dad." No, nothing like that's that. right. That it can go both ways.
Yeah.
Right. No, but later on in life, when I was in college, my dad came and visited me once, and I took him to this apartment where my friends lived, and he proceeded to tell the story of why he was so staunchly atheist. It was because he joined a cult. He got talked into joining a cult when he was younger, and like I had never heard that story before in my life, and it was just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a similar sort of... I was just talking to someone that there needs to be a good deprogramming program, I think, when you get out. There is a lot of, this is getting pretty deep, but there's a lot of guilt that's associated when you kind of decide to, that maybe that's not your
thing. Right. Well,
you know,
I can't, sure. I mean, I'm coming from a spot where I don't understand it at all.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, I will never be able to figure out what it feels like for somebody to, you know, grow up religious and then drop that religion all of a sudden, you know, like,
yeah,
that's gonna be earth-shattering. That is earth-shattering for
someone, but it's
right?
it's
I mean,
really
it changes
I mean,
everything.
Yeah, but it could also be really liberating, you know.
Well,
like,
yeah I guess so.
I mean, at least
maybe earth-shattering in a good way.
I think if you're growing up in like a really with the idea of like determinism or predeterminism, that everything's set out for you ahead of time and everything that's spinning around is like for a full purpose and it's all predetermined and all the good and and horrible shit are all part of the plan, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think that you could still get on board with that. You're trying to find a reason, but I think when you decide that's not your thing, for some people, you know, it's pretty liberating when it's all possible. And especially, you know, science is pretty mind blowing in itself.
It is,
you know, so.
It is. Look in a microscope.
Yeah. that was fun.
Discovering
science.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our first musical break here. We're going to go with another song off of your album, The Ornament. Now, is this, you said that you had two albums, right?
This is the first Gold Leaves
okay,
record.
Okay, this is the first
another
one.
Record from another band.
Oh, Arthur and You.
Yeah, with Arthur and You.
Yeah. And maybe when we come back, we'll talk about that, how like you know, started getting into the band into bands and stuff like that.
Sounds good.
So this is Hard Feelings off of The Ornament by Gold Leaves. And where can we find this? Where can we get this album?
Anywhere.
iTunes?
Any store. Yeah. Go to a record store.
Go to a record store.
Independent record
buy
store.
Buy a hard copy.
That's a new thing that at the merch table, I never got that. And because there was a gap between Arthur and You and this. But now everyone asked me if they could get it on the internet.
Yeah.
I think they mean like for free streaming, which I tell them, but.
Can you give me a website or something where I can download this?
A torrent site. go to a record store. Get out and go to a record store. They're fun places.
Get a hard copy. More people need to. What's
going
to happen?
Or going, you could, you know, pass around your friends, but make sure you're going into the record stores.
That's right. That's right. All right, this is Hard Feelings by Gold Leaves, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest today, Grant Olson. All right, here you go. Hello, the high spirits, they rose with anchors that you tugged on. You can bewitch anything that you hung on. Your ex's kid, you master yourself. Life. All right, we are back. That was Hard Feelings off of Gold Leaves' first album, right?
Yep.
The Ornament.
Yeah.
And so you can get that at a record store.
Yeah.
What's
or
that
wherever,
you say?
Or wherever, yeah. Record store or
what is that?
House. Yeah. You get off the internet.
It's a store that sells CDs. Go check it out. They used to sell tapes. So, yes, we are back with Grant Olson. And let's see. Let's just put a little disclaimer out there. And this is more for Grant because the listeners know this already. But it is the second half of the show. I've already had one bourbon. I'm about to have another one. So the words are going to start to get a little slurred. Anything with an S in it is becoming
right on.
Suspect.
Yeah. Mine are
that was
coming
a good
together.
One. Yeah.
That's a good tester. Good
yeah,
tester.
Yeah. Totally, totally. Well, welcome back, everybody. So before we left for that little musical break there, we were talking about religion, which we don't talk about often on this show. But I wanted to find out, did religion and breaking apart from that religion ever play like a role in your writing music?
That's an interesting question. I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, it opened a lot of doors. I mean, it didn't. I kind of veered off from, I guess, the path of
mm-hmm.
the canon, the appropriate canon in that box of. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm putting this. I'm generalizing here because my family's extended family's religious too, and uh-huh. there's some really smart and extremely academic folks.
Yeah, yeah,
in,
totally.
In that, and I'm definitely not saying that. But as far as maybe the breakup with the Baptist religion or whatever, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it informed.
Whoa, were you Baptist?
Yeah,
is that pretty hardcore?
It's kind of religious? In between. I mean, it is. It's not. It is. It's like the
middle
come
of the
as
road
you are, almost. Like. Clap hands and let's
way to go with the
you know,
Nirvana
worship.
Nirvana reference there.
What was that?
Bringing it back.
What was
come
that?
As you are.
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go. All Nirvana show. I'll try to work some.
Yeah,
other
just try to. right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like guitar playing, mm-hmm. Worship and stuff. But
yeah, yeah.
I think it's kind of part more of the mega church. I think those are like Baptist or Bible. Church. I don't know the
or like
exact.
Evangelical, right? Like,
yeah.
Is that more?
Yeah, a little bit.
See, I don't know. I don't know anything about religion.
But I mean, I guess I don't know. Before the caveat of all that is that there's
yeah.
very altruistic and like benevolent churchgoers that are doing great stuff because the mm-hmm. book has some good stuff in it. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I really like a lot of the. Blessed are the peacekeepers and the meek shall inherit the earth and rich man can't get to heaven sort of
well,
stuff.
Well, there's definitely a solid message in the Bible.
Yeah.
That a lot
very,
of people
many
take
of them, yeah.
the wrong way.
Well, there's, yeah, I think there's so many different
what's
messages
going on.
That are crisscrossing and you can,
yeah.
pick, you can
yeah.
you know, cherry pick whatever you want out of it. That's kind of, that's what I've found at least. But that's kind of how, yeah, I don't want to, I've been thinking, like, instead of there, because there's a lot of people that I think the first reaction is just to either dog it or because you know or whatever. But
right? Yeah, yeah.
I'd
yeah.
rather just see and
well,
instead
especially,
of a
especially
rejection is for the people who are deeply involved, like especially the youth to kind of embrace that.
Yeah, somebody who has the right to reject it with such.
Yeah, or the people
vitriol.
Who believe it. It's great and. I think they should argue against people who are focused on the really specific, I don't know, like
taking
sexual preference.
Yeah,
stuff
literal
that, you know,
literal interpretations or adding
deeper,
their own interpretations into it.
Yeah. Yeah, or interpret it for, you know, some more positive things.
Right,
which
right.
There's people that do that.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. But anyway.
So has this kind of influenced your writing lyrically
sure
or musically?
It's probably informed mm-hmm. me somehow. I don't know. I can't figure out a great example of that. Besides, I guess a lot of the content of this record doesn't really give any answers, you know. So uh-huh. I don't. It's more question marks or just general observations without a specific deity in mind.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or end result of.
You know, so you're a conscientious observer on this album.
I mean, starting to get there. That's how mm-hmm. I'm trying to get more. I mean, that's the goal of the writing, I think, eventually.
Yeah.
Is to get it to a point where I'm taking a complicated thing and making it kind of simplifying it a little bit in an artistic way, or taking certain things and putting them in a different context.
Is it easy for you to write lyrics then?
No,
That was always the most difficult thing that I had ever done when writing a song.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking from my own experience, like I've never made it to a level where, you know, I was playing shows in front of hundreds of people or anything, but still, like, you know, it doesn't matter. It's the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing for everything. But, that was always the hardest thing. Like, 'cause you don't want to come across contrived. Like, you know, you want to make sure that you're writing something poignant sometimes, or
yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different approaches, especially in music. You know, there's people get excited about because they relate to their either their story or their
right
pain or their happiness or whatever, and uh-huh. then there's you know, completely abstract writing, which is great. Same thing with anything like poetry.
Yeah.
Different reasons why people connect with it. I think the way I've always wanted to write is more in the way of, like, I don't know, like a
don't let the baby distract you.
It's a distracting baby. It's cute.
Yeah.
Hey, baby.
Wife and baby just got home.
Welcome.
Hi, Tatum. Okay, so
I would say, I guess the goal of my writing is to kind of have it be more of an observation in a way that, like, someone takes a photograph of something maybe innocuous and it sheds a light, brings it in a different context.
Right,
you know,
right.
It makes you think about it, gives it some different gravity that it didn't uh-huh. have on its own, you know, so... I guess that's the goal, kind of like, or a
do you think
field recorder or something like that.
Right, you know, right,
a conversation or the sound of something, all of a sudden putting it in that context.
Do you think you're getting close to that, or like,
I don't know. I mean,
is it? It's probably a never-ending journey, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Hunter S. Thompson trying to get to the absolute pinnacle of what he thought was gonzo journalism. Like, I don't think he ever thought that he actually made it.
Yeah, really. You know? I don't know. I'm a fan of the guy. Obviously, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's why he did what he did to himself. If he was frustrated or if he was just done.
I think it was all part of it. And that was like. Now we're going off onto a Hunter S. Thompson tangent. But I just watched The Rum Diary.
Oh yeah.
Which was a fantastic movie, by the way.
I thought it was really good too.
You saw it? Yeah.
Oh yeah. I loved that book when it came out.
I could never finish the book.
Really?
Yeah, I could never finish it. I've had it for years, and I can never finish the book. I don't know what it was. I think I constantly... Because the first Hunter S. Thompson book that I ever read was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Right.
Right? Which I think is a lot of people's first book by him.
Yeah, probably.
Or first experience with him, with his writing. And he said that was the closest... I believe it was... This is the quote, that was the closest he had ever gotten to gonzo journalism, where
puts
the reader right in the story.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, watching The Rum Diaries, I finally realized that was his, like, impetus to, like, coming up with this idea.
Yeah, because he was younger. Yeah, it was like the lost. That's fiction, though, for the most part.
But he did go down to...
He interjected his...
Right, yeah.
His magic into that, for sure.
Exactly. But yeah, great movie, so if you're a fan of Hunter S. Thompson and Johnny Depp, you should see that.
Yeah, I mean, I was living in Colorado for a while, and we went to try to find him when he was still alive up in
the
Woody Creek Tavern. But
yeah.
He had a spot there, but he wasn't there.
Oh,
God, that was a big phase.
Wouldn't that have been a trip?
Yeah, it would have been one of those things. I think once it happened, you would wonder, you'd realize immediately it was a bad idea and we'll go away feeling you pretty bad about gun? Yourself. Yeah. Oh, if that, it turned into that, that'd be great. I think that's what we thought it was going to turn into.
Right,
he
right.
He would have probably just...
He probably
made us feel bad about ourselves.
Yeah, shooed you away. And well, I think if you would have met him, especially at a bar, it would have been a bunch of incoherent speech and just being like, whoa, that was more sad than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I was a lot younger when it happened. I can't imagine trying to track someone down or even...
Right.
Yeah, or heroes.
Yeah, another hero. Hero that died.
Right.
Well, let's get, like, man, that's depressing, dude.
This is getting, I know. What else? Yeah. Suicides.
We should maybe we should stop right here, take some uppers, and then start talking.
Let's go. Downward spiral, man.
Yeah, here we go. Right into the pit. So let's switch gears here real quick and then kind of talk about how you got started with like Arthur and You and then, you know, coming into Gold Leaves.
Sure.
So like we were talking about in the beginning, you're playing guitar when you're a teenage age.
Mm-hmm.
And then were you playing in bands
a little
at that
bit
point too, or
a little bit
playing
here
with
and
other
there.
People at least?
Yeah. Just like, you know, friends and, mm-hmm. Nothing real serious, which is a great time. And then it got to when some of, you know, a little bit older when we had our own apartments and we would have like everyone started getting pedals and friends who play guitar didn't know how to play it. And we just play these and some really good musicians I played with growing up in that time that when we'd have like these all night sort of jam like can
jam,
not like we
jam
weren't really jammers
or
we were like really into can and stuff that time
and so
it'd be like that or like Captain Beefheart and when we'd play an night you called
you guys were playing Captain Beefheart tunes.
Well, that sort of idea I was really into that, not their tunes but the idea of like
just
obnoxious like
right
continuous
jam,
you know, which with no real
right, the ones that can like just go on for hours and there's no real structure.
I think
to it
we
at
thought
all.
That's what we were doing, but we definitely we weren't.
Where were you at that point? Where geographically?
That was Colorado.
Oh, okay.
At that point, various parts of that. I moved to Littleton, Colorado, from here.
Oh, okay.
Famous Littleton. Speaking of another amazingly uplifting Columbine, it's coming up.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Where is this going, man? Dark character.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And then I lived in Boulder for a while. That's kind
of
when a lot of that stuff was happening.
Yeah. And then so you're playing music with other people, getting more familiar. That was one thing that was tough for me too, is like getting familiar with playing with other people.
Yeah. That was a real natural time because I didn't have any aspirations of in the back of my I did I always have this master plan when I was young.
Everybody wants to be a rock star.
Yeah,
right?
It wasn't even that. I wanted to be the non-rock star.
Yeah,
rock
star.
Totally.
And then
I think like, you know, stuff like Elliott Smith, and that was also a big influence of, you know, his four track and the Elephant Six stuff, that a little bit coming
Elephant Six.
Oh, that the label of like Neutral Milk Hotel.
Oh,
Apples
okay, okay, yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff,
yeah, totally.
Which had a scene in Colorado as well. That kind of was the push a little bit with getting a four track and starting to do this stuff of my own and not really telling too many people about it, and then
just kind of keeping it to yourself, huh?
Yeah and then that
were you worried
on.
What people would think or what
yeah
was
for
the...
sure. I mean, I'm a relatively shy guy, so that that was a factor, and I just knew I was in a massive learning process, you know,
like
we were saying earlier, like it can't, I think maybe some people wake up and they could just, they got the magic, but
right.
I'm still worried, you know? Yeah. So it took me a long time to share cause I knew I was working on stuff and I'm still doing that. It's just time was wasting. So I still feel like that a little bit that I'm publicly kind of practicing, but
yeah.
That's where I'm kind of, I'm over the fear a little bit of that. I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could ask people that know me, I wallow a little bit in that fear. But
I think everybody
put
does
some stuff it, out finally.
Yeah. I think everybody does to a certain extent too. Like, I don't know. You always say whenever I would write something or record it or something like that, you know, you listen back to it and you're just like, this is shit.
Mm-hmm. Or you'd have the best parts. The reason that you kept going is, you know, when it was when it sounded like a song, and I would ask me, is this a song? Mm-hmm. You know, give it to other people, like, is this actually a song?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And have you haven't heard the song before, right? Because I don't think I have either. Like, this is a real song that I made. You know?
Okay, yeah, totally know
and
that
then,
feeling.
That was kind of the entire start of Arthur and You. Because then
really?
I moved here, and I had a few of these songs. And I was really into some duet projects at that time. Uh-huh. Really, super into the Everly Brothers and then like Ian and Sylvia and stuff like that. So I wanted to say, I was writing a lot of songs that kind of had an inherent mm-hmm. harmony to them.
Well, at this point too, like you moved back to Seattle. Did you know a lot of like the musician community around
here?
No,
I didn't know anyone when we moved here. I moved here with my girlfriend and uh-huh. then one of my buddies, and then I put an ad on Craigslist. That's
how really?
I met Sonia and Arthur and You.
Really? And
yeah.
she used to
well,
be,
she, I,
she
maybe
used to
I saw her
Rogue
ad.
Wave or something like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, so I saw her wow. ad, and I responded, and then sent her some of these 4-track tapes, and then we went on from there. Mm-hmm. But then we exchanged the 4-track for a Mac Mini that had GarageBand on it, or I had that. I just bought that computer and noticed it had more tracks on it, so I started just recording onto that, which was going to be our demo.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by the time we finished that demo, Hardly Art, or it was still Sub Pop. They had started, they were starting this label. And
yeah, yeah.
It was on that. They wanted to put out the demo version of it. So
what's the feeling behind that? Like, I mean, you said you were, well, I've got a 2-part question here. So what was the feeling behind, or God damn it. See, okay. Second glass of bourbon. Here it comes.
I'll decode it.
right. So you contact this person on Craigslist,
uh-huh.
and you were saying that you're kind of you've always kind of kept this stuff kind of secret. And,
yeah.
You know, you've always kept it interior to maybe you and your close friends or something like that. You know, the stuff that you have recorded, and then you go onto Craigslist and find somebody.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, time was ticking. I was 27 and
I
thought 30, I still thought 30 was the end of life, you know, that I had to have something
yeah,
out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I had, you know, I was, my girlfriend and I before here we lived in Prague for like 9 months. We were teaching English, which is great, but music and me, I always knew I was going to do this. Like I always wanted to put something out, you know, it had been in the works since I was a little kid, but
But were you nervous about like giving this to somebody that you had never met before?
A little bit.
Let alone
bit.
Somebody who was
a little
in
bit,
Rogue
but it
Wave?
Was yeah, anonymous. I didn't know that she was in another band until we met at a bar, and then she told me.
Did you know who Rogue Wave was?
Yeah, I did. I think I mean,
talk about the coolest band name ever.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. 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 Sure. And but yeah, I guess I was nervous. I mean, but mm-hmm. she was really comfortable relationship. So
right from
kind
the
of
start,
put it at ease. She just played bass in that band. I shouldn't
right,
say
right.
just, but she singing full on was a new thing to her too. So it was,
oh, really?
It was a new.
So she was starting. She was starting something.
Yeah, we were both starting something really new.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
and really something that we were.
What year was this?
That was 2006, maybe at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Her record came out in 2007, maybe then 2005. I don't know exactly, but So we were both really new and nervous. That's kind of was the impetus of Arthur and You, the name, because they were both our middle names that we didn't like, and
oh really,
something that you don't share with someone until you're kind of comfortable with them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the reason that we named ourselves that.
Oh, okay. Cool. It was a cool band name. Are you guys still playing too? Or
we haven't played in a while. We played a little benefit, just the two of us, about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to laugh, but it was tsunami benefit.
How'd it go?
Yeah.
Oh, tsunami.
That was great. Yeah. I'm just trying to think what else.
What else can you say?
Right terrible there? Things I could talk about, but yeah.
Oh man, Grant Olson, depressive.
Downer.
No.
But yeah, no. So that was the last show about a year ago.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are you guys still planning on doing some stuff?
We'll see. I mean, we plan all the time on and off.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
That's happening.
Does she still live here in Seattle?
Yeah, she has a band called We Are Loud Whispers that I think is going to come out in Harley Art as well.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out. I haven't heard of that
before.
Yeah,
it's great. It's really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's still planned. The door's not closed on it.
Uh-huh.
And there's songs that I want to record for it, but we'll just see.
And so how did this can I call this a solo project? Gold Leaves, or
yeah,
do you,
I mean, it's kind of a,
do you prefer a different term for that?
I don't know. That was because
you've had
the,
a lot of collaborators.
Yeah, and that was kind of the idea behind it, was that was going to be not, that was going to be like a family band stuff with people that I've met, and that to be a bigger
like a revolving.
Yeah, revolving, I mean, although now I kind of, it was meant to be a band, whereas Arthur New is more of like this, for lack of a better term, like a bedroom project sort of thing that. Okay. We record, you know, home recording stuff, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this, the idea of this was to have a big band. But I mean, after a little bit of rotation, I think I might have the band. I think these guys, well, if they stick around.
Yeah.
I mean, they're invited to stick around as long as they want. So we'll see.
You hear that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah, yeah. And you were saying before something that I had totally kind of forgotten about is that Tomo Nakayama is in the band as well.
He's kind of started on keys, but he's kind of become a utility player. He's playing some guitar and of course doing some singing.
He can do so many instruments. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's I envy
those people.
I know. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. I actually I envy people who can just play drums.
Yeah, he could do that too.
Yeah,
he's good at that. Yeah. He's really good at that. So, he played the first time I met him. He played drums for Arthur and You in Japan, because we went out with his band, or not out with them, but we met him
with Grand Archives.
Yeah, and played some shows in Japan.
Oh, cool.
Which was strangely like Arthur and You's first tour and first kind of some of our first shows.
It was. And how did that go?
It was great.
Were you nervous?
Oh yeah, I still get nervous for shows.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm nervous now. I mean,
Do you get the stomach thing?
Not too bad. I mean, it's more just, you know, kind of outer worldly sort of,
right?
You know, like
right.
Not present, which works sometimes in my favor for playing music, because that's the thing, a place you try to get to. But
yeah.
Towing the line between that and being present and, you know, recognizing where you are and is good to life. But
right.
I remember being pretty nervous out there, but it was coupled with a lot of crazy jet lag and
I bet
good times at night, so it kind of all worked together.
Yeah, yeah. But you had a good overall.
Oh yeah,
it was,
it was
experience.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. I'm itching to go back there.
Yeah,
really badly. It's a great place. Really good crowds. Extremely like pro. Every venue, as you know, great gear. Sound guys are amazing, and crowds are really polite. And it's freaky in that way that there's not, you know, pin drop sort of crowd.
Uh-huh.
And they clap after the song, and then it's just silent.
But
so.
they don't talk through your set.
No, you
nothing
can. So you
like
can't
that.
You
like,
can't fuck up, or you're gonna get caught for sure.
Oh man,
yeah. So
that's
gotta
be
stage,
just totally nerve wracking.
Yeah, but
oh,
it was great.
God.
It was great. I mean, that's, you know, after you play a little while, that's the goal in certain,
right,
a
right.
certain way. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, totally.
Now it's always trying to get people to listen to you. You know. So.
Yeah, I did my first hosting gig at the Hard Rock Cafe just last weekend. And did a little bit of stand-up comedy. It was my first time of being on stage without a guitar.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, and it was like, I was so nervous. And see, I get the stomach thing, you know, when I'm about to go up on stage. And like, I think, you know, when I was playing in bands, the biggest crowd that we had at a show was probably like 250 people.
Yeah,
and there were like 500 people at this thing that I did for Emerald City Comic Con. And Oh man,
how'd you do?
I did well.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I think I did anyway.
That's the most noble thing.
I see it in my head. I did well. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a stand-up comic is hats off, man. That's...
Well, it took me a week to come up with 3 minutes of material, and I don't think I ever want to do stand-up comedy ever again.
No.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's so.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's so dependent on a specific reaction.
Right. Right.
You know? And if it doesn't happen, then.
Yeah,
holding it together has got to be tough.
Well, the
people can still be quiet or talk over you when you're singing, but you got a band, you got a guitar, you could, you know.
And that's what I was going to say too, because like when when there'd be a pause or something when I was talking, like you could hear, you know, there was a uproarious, you know, people talking and stuff, not laughter, but there was some laughs.
I'm sure
there
they were
some
just
laughs.
Talking about how awesome you were.
Yeah, thank you, man. You're awesome. Can you come back on this show again? Because that's rad. But yeah, it was so nerve wracking. But if everybody was quiet in that place, that would have. I mean, holy
crap.
Yeah,
that's freaky too. I mean, there's that aspect of everything, but with shows that are kind of underattended, those are the scariest shows when they are really quiet and kind of.
Well, you've been doing this for a while, so like, what happens when you do have a show like that, when there's, you know, five people in the audience? Do you try to make yourself think of like, well, this will be good practice, or do you beat yourself up about?
Oh no, I mean, it never fails that those are always the shows on YouTube though, and really because because it's quiet and someone just. Has the chair, so they pull out that.
Or it's a diehard fan that's
coming out. Totally.
And like, you know.
I think some of our in-stores, I mean, much to, with both bands, to our demise, were like small, under-attended shows where I don't think we were all into it, or that comes across, those are always the YouTube. So I think, yeah, you try to have some sort of angle to it. And, mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, we have a really good time when we're just practicing, so. At this point, I think all the material is still new. We it's pretty malleable, so we change it up and we change some of the structures, and we have some areas that we can mess around with that we kind of we're still getting to know each other in that regard, even though we've been touring for a few months, but and still going figuring out exactly what the sound of like the band itself is. So,
Are you guys writing together now too, or are you
a
still
little bit
kind of
I'm trying
writer.
To that's my goal. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's so hard for me to relinquish like all that stuff, because I really write and with a lot of different parts in mind.
Right
So, but I mean, these guys, they're
well, that's
great.
That's been the impetus to, I keep on using that word,
I think I used it
for
too,
for lack of a better term. That's the impetus for a lot of bands of breaking up too. Like, it's like, you know, like you said, kind of relinquishing power over how the song sounds, or like somebody has a different.
I really try. I trust these guys a lot. I think we're on the same page.
Right. I'm not.
We haven't
recorded yet.
That'll be interesting. I mean, I know. I think about it all the time. Uh-huh.
We'll
see when. It's a different. I don't want to get in trouble here, but yeah, it's a different band in that. I mean, everyone has other bands, and that's kind of there's a lot of bands. I think there's two kinds of bands in that, in that regard, you know. There's the kind of bands that all grow together from, you know, some sort of like egalitarian spot, or you might even write together, like a drummer starts a beat. I've never been in a band besides like just jamming with friends or like that. I've always had to spend a lot of time by myself to get it to a point. And I heavily demo stuff just to kind of get all my ideas out there, and then see what happens in the studio.
Yeah,
that's how this record went a lot. I demoed it really heavily. Some of the points I was really stuck on are still
when
on
you
the
say
record.
Demo, do you mean like
just
practicing and
no,
recording
for,
it? Or
for Gold Leaves, I demoed it all myself. Kind of like the Arthur and You record was like all the, I just did a lot of stuff on Casio, like, okay, this will be a ace tone or something like that. But putting the ideas, just mapping it out, just a low quality sketch. But and then I brought it in the guys who I recorded with, and which are different guys than I'm playing with now. Kind of as a launching off point. Jason Cueva, who produced it, was a great producer in that regard, like recognizing what the parts that we shouldn't you know, veer off from were and the parts that could use some work or, and same with me. Some of that was just being really open to letting us work around some parts that I wasn't really beholden to at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard though too. I mean, some of the older songs, I was just kind of tired of them. So when they got in the studio, I was kind of just freaking.
Well, that's the worst part too, because like when, you know, you've been playing these songs for so long and trying to get them just perfect for when you guys go in and record them in the studio. By that time, you're like, I'm sick of this song. And so you're not playing it like you should be playing it, right? You're not playing it with heart when you go in there.
Yeah, it was different because this was.
Heart the organ, not the band.
Right. But, yeah, exactly. I mean, that. That's
that was like one of my jokes that I did at Hard Rock Cafe. It just killed. It killed.
It's the Kraven, local, yeah,
local reference. Exactly. Yeah, totally.
But yeah, what was I saying?
The recording process.
Yeah, like, I mean, this next record, I'm trying to do a little bit differently. I mean,
okay, so you're actively working on something right now.
Yeah. Okay. Ideally, we would just go in and record as soon as a song was done, and just kind of capturing that idea at that point and not letting too much time lag. But I don't think we have the leisure of that just because we don't have the... I mean, we got to figure out the advance and our budget and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And go into it all together, probably. Right. It's probably better to do that anyway. Then you could really focus. It doesn't sound disjointed. Unless,
do it all at once, like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's different ways to do it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's really a perfect way of doing it because a lot of records that I really love, you know, they're just done so many different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially at this point.
Totally. So when can we? Is there a timeline that you got?
I'd really like to get it recorded this year. That's the goal.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I've said that many times before, but that's the goal. I mean, I'm further along with this than I have. I mean, I usually just, I have a bad habit of just getting a bunch of material and scrapping it. I don't know. I'm not going to do that this time. Oh, fingers crossed.
I hope so, man. I hope so. I think you're very talented and I'm loving if I may use the word shit, I'm loving the shit out of the ornament right now.
Thanks a lot, man.
So it's very good, and I look forward to hearing the new stuff, man.
All right, thanks a lot, Aaron.
And when that comes out, I hope that you'll come back on.
Oh yeah,
it'd be great. It'd be great. We've had a good conversation tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Let's plug your wares really quick. Where can we find your website, or if you have a website? Or?
Website forthcoming, but I am going to it's kind of in the works. Maybe Facebook, you can find the stuff on Harley Art.
Okay.
Or all over the torrent sites. I don't know the names of these places.
Don't give out the torrent sites. Yeah, don't do that. You need to make a little cash off of this.
Yeah, just come to a show. We're not playing again for a little while. We're going to play the Sasquatch Festival.
Oh, you are? I will be there as well. So hopefully we'll run into each other at that thing. Well, Grant Olson, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And if you do buy Grant's album, Gold Leaves, The Ornament, off of iTunes, remember to rate it. Remember to give it a 5-star rating on there, right? Because that always helps.
I don't know anything about that, but it sounds good. If it's 5 out of 5... 5 out of 10.
Done.
All right.
5 out of 25. Yeah, right. it's a flawed system.
All right, cool.
No, Grant, thank you so much for coming on, and thanks you for listening to the Air Raid podcast. And remember, you can find us on Facebook at air-raid.net. Just go up into the handy search bar and plug that in. Also, you can email me, Aaron, at air-raid.net, and on Twitter at Air Raid Net. Do you have a Twitter handle?
No.
You got a Twitter?
I got a account locked in, but
yeah,
my virtual life is...
Twitter is the hardest fucking thing to do ever, man.
Yeah. Well, people seem to have a pretty easy time with it all day long.
Yeah, here's my theory on a lot of these like funny Twitter people. They're looking up quotes on Google, and then they're plugging those, they're copy and pasting that stuff into Twitter.
Yeah.
Because some of these people are not that clever. I'm telling you that. That is the truth, sir. Well, thank you again, Grant Olson, for the fantastic conversation. We're going to go out today with another song off of Gold Leaf's album, The Ornament. And this song is called Futures. So I hope you enjoy this, and have a great week, everybody. Futures by Gold Leaves.
And the ore became a flame, a fire you held your hand to. And your mouth a cage, you kept the choir. Cause where you're coming from, I know.